You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Come from you, ghetto people, yeah.
What are you gonna
giving up a second thought about you now. Ghetto people,
who you gonna turn to next?
Tell me, people, you gotta take a look at yourself, yeah. Ghetto people,
where do you wanna be?
Where you wanna
tell
be?
Me why your life is?
What's with your life? Running like a red disease. Ghetto people.
Stop giving up yourself.
Stop doing what you're doing to yourself, young. You got to learn to love yourself. Ghetto people.
You are listening to African Perspectives, where we view the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity. Everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future, we all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. Say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa,
okay,
of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe, civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the Ma'afa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement: Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Dingmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted, and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and in honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashay. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Baba Oshi. Hotel family, hope everything is well for you today. Hope you had a great weekend, that you had a chance to do all the things you want to do, should do, must do, can do, and will do. And I hope the weather was accommodating for you to do it. But of course, if it was not, you got it done anyway. Because it had to get done. You know, it was something that just must get done, and you got it done. And that's what we as a people must begin to do. Get things done. Because that's the only way we'll get up out of this. And we got to get things done. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, or any other time around the world. And if you can't listen to this live, you can always go to our archives at timeforanawakening.com. At the top of the page, you'll see podcast. Click on that. In the drop down, you'll see programs, African Perspectives. Click on that. And then there will be programs that are dated and titled. Thanks to my good brother, Brother Kwaku. And thank you, Brother Kwaku. I thought that my mic was off, and I see that it wasn't all the way off. And so apologize, brothers and sisters out there. Hope I didn't say nothing stupid. You know, nothing embarrassing. But I appreciate that. Other programming we have here on Time for an Awakening Media on Mondays. From 8 to 9, from 8 p.m. to 9 p.m., Black Therapy Central with Dr. Kamal Kamban, Dr. Mawia Kamban, and Nataki Kamban. From 9 to 10, Conversation, Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey of Encobra. On Tuesdays, from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m., Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers. On Tuesdays, from 8 to 10. And then on Wednesdays, the Black Farmers Report from 8 to 9. If it's Friday and it's 8 p.m., it's Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. On Saturdays from 7 to 9, the Sankofa Elders Council. And then on Sunday, once again at 7 p.m., it's Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. We buy black. We buy black. The largest online marketplace for American African-owned businesses is WeBuyBlack.com. Brothers and sisters, get everything you need from American African-owned businesses. WeBuyBlack.com. And brother, go on there and support what WeBuyBlack.com are trying to do. I know one thing they're trying to do still, and it's a damn shame that it hasn't happened years ago, and that is to develop a supermarket here in the Atlanta area. I know it's ridiculous, isn't it, that we don't have a supermarket that is owned and operated by us, provides jobs for our children, provides an outlet for the brothers and sisters who are farmers, and other brothers and sisters who have products.
So I know it's a damn shame. In this whole metropolitan area of over 6 million people, of which over 2 million are us. Over 2 million people are us. I mean, if you just want to go in Atlanta City of 600,000, over 300,000 are us. In the city of Atlanta, we're over half the city's population of 600,000. Brothers and sisters, go to WeBuyBlack.com. Damn. Africa for the Africans. Africa for the Africans, Brother Bamani Taimba, who's been taking our people to the motherland and exposing them to the beauty of Africa and having them understand, hey, this is something that you can definitely be in. This is something you can contribute to. This is something, someplace you can live. And so, brothers and sisters, check out AfricaForTheAfricans.org. His Senegal and Gambia trip, unfortunately, did not meet the minimum number of people for the tour and has been rescheduled for next year, March 31st to December 10th, 2023. And my good brother, Irv Lewis, was supposed to have been going there. Too bad. And but he's patient. He said he's going to go next year. He's patient. Also, too, the Ghana tour, May 24th to June 5th. And then the Tanzania, November 17th to the 28th. And then Ghana again, December 24th to January 5th. Excuse me. Ghana tour, May 24th to June 5th. I don't know if I said that correctly. And then Tanzania, November 17th to the 28th of November of this year. And then the Ghana tour, December 24th to January 5th, 2023. The difference in that trip is an additional $200. But the scheduling of the scheduling of the Senegal and Gambia trip is still $3,800. March 31st to December. Damn, Oshi. March 31st to April 10th, 2023. Also, too, there's land for sale. Investments for at the Black Star Repatriation and Pan-African Community in Ghana. This is a 15-plus 60-acre two-phase land development investment opportunities in Ghana. You know, and so if you go to the website, you'll see it and you'll get all the information. So go to Africa for the Africans, AfricaForTheAfricans.com. If you want to see pictures of previous tours, go to Facebook.com/Bamani. If you want to see videos of previous tours, go to YouTube.com/2007 Bamani 2007 Africa for the Africans.org. Habashah, HabashahIncorporated.org. Habashah has been doing great work. Habashah is a pan-African organization that cultivates leadership in youth and families through practical experiences in culture education, sustainable agriculture, entrepreneurship, and holistic health and technology. Look at the beautiful. Go to their website, AfricaForTheAfricans.org, and you'll see the great work that these brothers and sisters are doing with Habashah Works Program, Black to Our Roots, Sustainable Seeds, Golden Growers, and the Urban Green Jobs. And, of course, the Kashi Project that is ongoing in Africa. The village is up. It's beautiful. It is beautiful. So, brothers and sisters, go to HabashahIncorporated.org. The LEDGE Program. LEDGE, Land for the Environmental Development for Group Economics. The LEDGE Program, working in the four areas of human existence, food, water, clothing, and shelter. With 12 projects in 6 countries on the continent, employing over 170 of our brothers and sisters and over 260 members, become a member of the LEDGE group. You can buy land as a member in Tanzania. You can buy at $250 an acre, you can buy land. Man, trying to wake y'all up. Wake y'all up if you are a member of LEDGE, Land for the Environmental Development of Group Economics. Abibia Toomey. Abibia Toomey. A-B-I-B-I-T-U-M-I. Abibia Toomey.com. Brothers and sisters, go to Abibia Toomey, wherever your search engine is. Go there and then make Abibi Atumi your constant one for all the information that you need. AbibiAtumi.com. The language programs, the shops, all the things that they have to offer. Check out Abibi Atumi, AbibiAtumi.com. Summer Pharmacy. It stands for Sekhmet, the god Sekhmet. Medicine Awakens Imhotep. Pharmacy. And pharmacy is spelled Pharmacy. Brothers and sisters, go to SekhmetPharmacy.com. Or you can contact Brother Jabril at 731-327-6229. That's 731-327-6229. Or if you want to give an email, SMAIFARMACY@gmail.com. I repeat, SMAIFARMACY@gmail.com. That's my pharmacy. Wadada's Healthy Market and Juice Bar. Wadada's Healthy Market and Juice Bar, located in the West End here in Atlanta on Ralph David Abernathy. In the West End Mall, right across the street from the Soul Vegetarian Restaurant, up the street from the Shrine of the Black Madonna, which unfortunately is still not open at this time. They have delicious smoothies and fruit drinks and pastries and vegan dinners on Saturdays and Sundays and all kind of other good stuff. Bean pie, yeah. Ice creams, all kind of good stuff at Wadada's Healthy Market and Juice Bar. The Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall, Mama Nia. Check her out in the Greenbrier Mall if you're in the Atlanta area. You know, or give her a call. Because if you're looking for a book, you may not have a bookstore in your area. And here, it's, believe me, if you, she'll send it to you. Believe me. So give her a call at 404-346-3263. That's 404-346-3263. The Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall. She has a fine selection of books, postcards, greeting cards, T-shirts, gift certificates, figurines, and all kind of good stuff. Give her a call. Brother Kazim Dejamo, the Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore in Lithonia at 404-519-8107. That's 404-519-8107. There is light in the Black Dot. Also, too, Brother Afroletics, he has a store in the new Black Wall Street Market in Stonecrest. The new Black Wall Street Market in Stonecrest, right off of I-20, Interstate 20, going towards, if you're traveling west, excuse me, if you're traveling east, then you're going towards Augusta in that area. If you're traveling west, then you're going towards Atlanta. And then you exit at Prairie Hill Road. And if you're heading east, you make that right, three lights, make another right, and bam, there it is. It was a Target store. It's huge. And so they have a number of stores in there. As I said the other day, and I'll just say it again probably for the last time, I wish, you know, that they would have completed the thing, got the money and completed it, and then had the opening as in its full bloom, and then really push and promote it, because I feel the last two times I've been in there, it's been so sparse and some of the stores don't even open, that this thing has a potential for not making it, for not making it. Man, and it's a damn shame. So, check out Afroletics. They have a store in there. My good brother, Sajafo. Saj, he has his jewelry store, an art store in there. And then also, too, another
this
good brother.
This call may be recorded or another transcribed.
Good brother, another good brother, he has a CBD store, Brother Mike McGee Jr., CBD. So, the new Black Wall Street Market located on right off of I-20. Us Lifting Us, the Economic Development Cooperative for our people in the spirit of Ujamaa. Brothers and sisters, check out the Us Lifting Us Thursday night broadcast every Thursday night from 9 p.m. to 10 p.m. on Blog Talk Radio. That's blogtalkradio.com/ULU, Us Lifting Us, every Thursday night. You can call to listen or give questions, comments, or concerns at 929-477-2789. That's 929-477-2789. 2789. Us lifting us. Homeland Village, Cultural Gift Shop, and everything else. They got furniture. They got clothing. They even have a vegan restaurant, jewelry tapes and CDs. Man, the brother got it going on. Right, brother? So check out Brother Abijah. Give him a call. He's located 2910 Napier Avenue in Macon, Georgia. But give him a call at 478-256-1166. That's 478-256-1166. Homeland Village and Cultural Gift Shop located in Macon, Georgia. Sun Goddess Scents. Sun Goddess Scents, your one-stop natural shop located at 4140 Jonesboro Road in Forest Park, Georgia, inside the International Discount Mall, booth 225. Give our sister Shelly Amundsen a call at 404-434-7963. That's 404-434-7963. Sun Goddess Scents, your one-stop natural shop. Brothers and sisters, go online to Sanjay-Haiti and look at the work that Sister Gabby has done with our children in the northeastern portion of the island of Haiti, which, of course, you know, there is no safety nets. They don't get nothing. The government, which is located in the southern part, in Port-au-Prince, because they're located in the northeastern portion of the island, you know, and all in the hills and brush, but they're doing a fantastic work. She's doing great work in the islands of Haiti, you know, so she deserves to be supported. So go to Sanjay, Sonjay-Haiti, AYITI.org, Sanjay-Haiti. Akabin Institute, I want to say that the presentation that Baba Baruti gave this past Saturday was just outstanding. Oh, man. As always, outstanding. Good attendance by brothers from across the country, you know. And so, brothers and sisters, go to Akabin Institute. Send your check, make your check or money order out to Akabin Institute, P.O. Box 10786. Atlanta, Georgia, 30310. That's P.O. Box 10786. 30310, but you can make a Cash App or PayPal donation. Make it ongoing. Make it monthly if you can afford to. Whatever amount, believe me, it would be greatly appreciated. On Cash App, the dollar sign, Yah, his lovely wife, N-E-Yah, Yah, Y-A-A, the letter M, and then Baruti, B-A-R-U-T-I. Also, too, the books that Baba Baruti has for sale, prolific writer, you go to Akabin House. Go to Akabin House, okay? Go to AkabinHouse.com, AkabinHouse.com. All right. And these are the books that I read every day on this program, which is the Inye Sesim of Daily Revolutionary Thought that gets us off the ground, you know? And on, you know, every day I read the day before and the day of. On Fridays, I read the day before, which is Thursday, the day of Friday, and Saturday. So I read three of them, of course, yesterday being Sunday, and this was the day. It was February 6th. February 6th. The underdog does not stop to philosophize about his position. Paul Lawrence Dunbar. We are filled with histories describing the motives and acts of our people has defeated reflections of European agendas and visions of grandeur and domination. We have fallen for the power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. Eurasianing has an acceptable universal excuse for what they have done without conscience. And because of this, we have come to accept that all humanity thinks the same, believing that it is only the skilled opportunity and determination of winners and losers which distinguishes people along lines of wanton violence and epidemic and endemic corruption. This universal, sometimes you know the word, you're reading the word, but you just can't verbalize it correctly. Your enunciation and your diction. This universalization of the European mind makes their story normal and turns us into them, except without their victory. Such thinking removes our ability to objectively view reality, our reality, and move towards an empowerment reflective of the African mind. It allows the European nation to continue and even escalate their march toward the globalization of their empire with our assistance and consent, because we think that they are the scent of the modern and the model of humanity. Affirm, I recognize humanity based on thought and action. Affirm, I recognize humanity on the base of thought and action. February 7th. It is a people's culture, their shared creativities and struggles as they evolved over time and space, that defines their essence. Culture is the tie that binds. If there is no shared culture, there is no group, no unity, no solidarity, no sovereignty. This is why the engine of the group oppression is always cultural genocide. I repeat, this is why the engine of a group oppression is cultural genocide. Nana Balfour, Dr. Asa Hilliard. One fundamental culturally reinforced lesson we need to grasp is of the nature of struggle. The nature of any struggle is pain. There is no way around it. One does not exist without the other. However, the goal of all meaningful struggle is to prepare individuals within the groups to overcome greater pain in pursuit of self-determination. For pain is not the enemy. It is the teacher. Only through the struggle with pain are warriors tempered and removed the enemy from within and from without. Affirm, African culture is my immune system, I say. Affirm, African culture is my immune system. Brothers and sisters, the Inye Sesim of daily revolutionary thought. Today, it's kind of special. We're going to have a lesson. You know, this is African and American African History Month, which is, that's what I say. That's what I term it. You know, it ain't black. You know, I told you, I reject that. Because we ain't black. It's a color. It's an adjective. Dr. Clark said, when you talk about a people, you must conjure land, history, and culture. Culture. There's no such thing as race. There's cultures. No such thing. Europeans devised the concept of race, giving themselves the top position, everybody else at a lower position, with us at the lowest position. Cultures. And the African culture of what we were able to do is at the forefront. It's at the forefront. That's why this month is important. They didn't give us this. They don't give you damn thing. Carter G. Woodson publicized it. He promoted it. He created it. This month because of Frederick Douglass. Frederick Douglass didn't know when his birthday was. He chose February 14th because his mother said, "You are my heart. You are my Valentine." So February 14th is Frederick Douglass's birthday. And to honor him, and his steadfastness in terms of, although his politics, you know, we have. But I mean, hey, some of us believe that we can appeal to Caucasians, because there. Let me just say this, because there are some Caucasians who were genuine, who really wanted to help, who allowed their homes to be used on the Underground Railroad. You know, John Brown, who was willing to throw down, you know, him and his sons. You know, so, but no, I ain't endorsing none of the thank you. In fact, I maintain, go to the Caucasians and tell them that. Talk to them about that. Because to me, the only people that are working, should be working on our liberation is us. And we should not seek any outside help. It's us. Because we have all that we need. And the only reason why that we continue to do that is because we don't have our right minds. But this is the month to help us to reclaim, recapture, and restore our might, our right minds. This is African and American African History Month. And probably the best thing that you can do, as far as I'm concerned, in this month, is go to YouTube. Yeah, that's right. I'm going to say it. Go to YouTube, to Great Pyramid K 2019. And ever how you want to do it, if you want to do it, if you got 3.5 hours or whatever to sit down and watch the whole thing through, please do. If you need to break it up into thirds, an hour today, an hour tomorrow, an hour the next day, please do that. Whatever how you want to do it. Because one thing became very clear to me, logically, even though this Caucasian, he was Armenian, I believe, and lived in France, who made it and developed it, it became clear to me he was on point. I'm sorry. He was on point. We could not have physically made the pyramids the way we were taught or instructed, as I even talked to young people that I worked with, that we quarried them out and dragged them and put them on barges and sailed them from south to north downriver and then dragged them off the barges and dragged them up ramps or whatever and placed them one against the other so perfectly. We couldn't have done it. It's not physically, humanly possible. And when you look at the documentary, but more importantly, no, go there, because I've been there. I've been to Kemet. And it would seem to me, when you look at the pyramids and temples and tombs, it would have been a longer time as opposed to the 70 some years it took for the great pyramids at the Pyramid Plateau, the Pyramid of Khufu, Khafre, and Menkaure. It would have taken a much longer time. So I'm saying, brothers and sisters, if you do anything this month, because what I say is promoting African and American African history. Yes, American African history is great, in spite of all of the racism, segregation, humiliation, denial, and still we rise. It is great, the things that we were able to do and accomplish, things that probably, to me, ain't no damn doubt in my mind that Eli Whitney stole the cotton gin information. You know what I'm saying? Because his ass wasn't working. He wasn't doing nothing. But we were constantly. And it was because of that, some of the inventions that were created was out of a better way to do something. The brother that created the lawnmower. The sister that created the ironing board. The sister that created the ability to heat your home. All these inventions that we have. Brothers and sisters, it is there. It is documented. Our greatness is real. But because of an evil entity, Europeans, Caucasians, Urugu, who came out of the icebox, who have no sensibilities and no sensitivities, who are selfish, greedy, callous, and indifferent. I'm talking about the Caucasian collective, y'all. I ain't talking about some, you know, no, I ain't all that bad. But you're right, okay, you may even have a relative. You may even have a Caucasian relative, or you may even be married to a Caucasian, to a Urugu, but you still have a level of consciousness. Yeah, okay. I ain't saying it ain't possible, you know. But that one thing that my brother Irv told me, he said he liked about Brother Bomani, he don't take no Caucasians on the tour. You don't take no Caucasian. If you got a Caucasian wife, then you keep her at home if you want to go. You know, or y'all just go on your own, you know. But on the Africa for the Africans. It is Africa for the Africans, brothers and sisters, okay? Yeah. Oh, let me do this. I wanted to do this because it's important. Where did that go? Yes. Another good brother, Dennis Blackwell. Another good brother, firefighter. You know, also, too, let me just say this. Tomorrow, there's a service for my good friend Willie Williams of Milwaukee. I know a Willie Williams in Baltimore. I know a Willie Williams in Philadelphia. You know, Willie Williams is pretty common name, you know. But my good friend Willie Williams in Milwaukee, we were the first two brothers to work together on the same shift, on the same apparatus, Engine 9. Yep. And he made his transition. And he'll be termed tomorrow. So, and here, he's here in Atlanta, both from Milwaukee. He went to high school. He's a couple years older than me. But I remember him before we came on. And, of course, when we came on, and then I was assigned to there. And with him being there, it really saved my ass. It really did. Because some of them crackers on the red shift, rednecks, you know, just really tried me, you know. And so, thank goodness. So, because I kept a job 31 years, and I got a pension and some savings. So, that's good. But another good firefighter who always listens to the program, I appreciate him, and that's Brother Dennis. And he always sends out good memes, man. I tell you, he gets a lot of stuff from all over, and he just sends out good stuff. And I appreciate you, brother. I really do. Give me a call sometime, man. All right. He sent this one out. And in fact, that's what we're talking about today. Yeah, I tell you, just like the Inye Sesim and other things happen, I somehow get a topic. A lot of times I get a topic the day of, let's be real. Sometimes I do, you know, have guests, of course, and I do a topic in the day before and research it and make it happen. But sometimes I get a topic the day of, like today, and things fall into place. And this happened for me as well, which is, of course, dealing with our ancestors. Let the ancestors speak. Whether we acknowledge it or not, they are the ones that come before us, the ones that opened the way for you to be here, ones who prayed for you before they knew you and fought for your future. Whether we are in tune or not, they walk among us in the spirit realm. We stand on their shoulders. They are still in our blood and bones. And when we heal, they heal from generational illness and experiences. Whether we hear it or not, the ancestors will still speak to us from where they are in our dreams and in the coincidences of our daily lives. They have wisdom to pass on to us spiritually. We are the ancestors. And they are us. We are the ancestors, and they are us. There is a lot of power on our side. Listen, and they will speak. Ashe. 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 Oh. So, this is, I, you know what? I don't know. I was, you know, thumbing through Pan-African Alliance, and, you know, they have a lot of good stuff on Pan-African. I have a few other things that I often get, and I, of course, and I share and read, and becomes our topic. And this was a lesson. 300,000 years of African history that will never be taught in schools. And that was my piece that I did when I was going to the schools back in Milwaukee. You know, I always said to them, I'm going to teach you things that you will not learn in this school about yourselves and your history and your culture. This lesson, I could say, I don't know who the brother's giving, and there'll be some brothers and sisters who are taking this course, but it's about 50 minutes, so it'll run, and we'll take a break afterwards, so the break will be late, and then we will also to open up for questions and answers, you know, and I've got to figure out how I can get the other parts of it, because it's much longer than what this is. It's a course. From the beginning of our history, of African history, to the first Kemetic king. That's right, from the first Kemetic king. Stolen Legacy course. Okay, reclaiming our stolen legacy. Proof that every human civilization had its origins in Africa. Why African low self-esteem leads to African denial. And you hear it all the time. I ain't African. I ain't no African. I'm indigenous. I'm a native. I ain't no African. The relationship between the Genesis in the Bible and the Osirian drama of ancient Kemet, Osir, Oset, and Heru. What the 25,000-year-long grand procession is, and how the first African empire in modern history was also built. Those are some of the things. And once again, this is a course, and so I'm going to figure out how I can do this, because I didn't have this on my tablet, but I got it on my computer. So here it goes, brothers and sisters, reclaiming our stolen legacy.
Important topic. My job.
Sorry about that. Let me start it over, okay? Let me start it over. So
this is a very important topic. My job as an instructor, as a teacher, is to tell you all what happened in the most interesting way possible. That's my job here. So while this may sound like a story, do not mistake this for the lesson that it is. And as you listen, as we go through time, put this into the context of your life mission. Use this as an opportunity to correct the miseducation and misinformation that you've been indoctrinated with matriculating through the public school system. All right? A lot of this information you've heard, some of it you have not heard. But as we fill in more pieces, and as this course progresses, you all will develop a more complete 360 of who you are, how you came to be, the world around you, and your place in that world. In other words, black consciousness or knowledge of self. So for you to truly understand who you are, family, you got to go back to the beginning. For us to look at so-called black history in the context of slavery, for us to look at black history in the context of the Ma'afa, for us to look at black history in the context of Kemet is not enough. We've got to go back at least 300,000 years. Of the creatures that walked the earth before 300,000 years, many of them resembled us, but these were not humans. They did not possess the anatomy, nor did they possess the consciousness that we possessed back then and still possess today. Back then, 300,000 years ago, every part of the world was lush and fertile, every part except for Europe. These landscapes were frozen wastelands. They were nightmarish, windswept terrains where the sun vanished for half the year and barely rose above the horizon for the other. The areas north of 40 degrees latitude were places that were so unfit for human habitation that survival was only possible. How? By retreating into subterranean caves. These were not the gardens of Eden talked about in the Bible. And speaking of in the Bible of the Hebrews, it said that the Garden of Eden is the cradle of mankind. Genesis 2:13 claims that one of the rivers flowing out of Eden winds through the entire land of Cush. If you have your Bibles, go to Genesis 2:13, and it says it right there. But as anthropologist John Jacques Houblon put it, if there was a Garden of Eden, it was the size of the continent of Africa. So here are some of the lies that you've been told, just to set our conversation into context. Some of the lies that you've been told. Lie number one, we don't know who the original people were. Lie number two, the Garden of Eden was in the Middle East somewhere. Lie number three, humanity popped up in multiple places outside of Africa. Have you all heard those lies?
Yep. You're all up.
No.
Well, we're going to dispel two of those in a moment. One of them needs to be dispelled right now. I keep making reference to the Garden of Eden because when we go back to the beginning, typically we think, well, the beginning started in the Garden of Eden, right? Here's where the concept of the Garden of Eden being placed in the Middle East came from. The ruler of Rome, you all know where I'm going with this, but follow me. The ruler of Rome at the time when this was decided was who?
Constantine.
Constantine. So the Roman Empire was facing a number of issues. The empire had gotten too big for itself. And some genius decided, you know what, in order to better manage what's going on with our empire, we should split it into two. Instead of having one emperor, we should have two emperors. Now, this made sense for a number of reasons. Number one, it would make the economy more manageable. And number two, in the western part of Rome, they were dealing with barbarian hordes that were relentless. These were their savage cousins, their less civilized components, right? And there are levels to this thing. So we can say, well, Rome itself wasn't civilized, and you'd be absolutely right. But these were the bastard barbarian, you know, ascendants of the Roman Empire. Those were the Franks, the Visigoths, the those who would later become the Vikings and that group of people. Those were the ones in the western part of the empire, okay? So we're thinking Germany, France, present-day Germany, France, those areas, Belgium, etc. True indeed. The eastern part of the empire was the more civilized part of the empire. It was the part of the Roman Empire that was closer to the spiritual centers of the planet, namely Kemet. Now look, by the time Rome split, Kemet had already descended. However, the knowledge that was kept in Kemet had disseminated out into the rest of the world. So now you had the knowledge, the light that came out of Kemet showing up in the Middle East, showing up in Asia, in the Dravidian culture, showing up in the Far Eastern cultures, right? So this was the part of the Roman Empire that was closer to the cradle of mankind and the cradle of knowledge. So this was the more civilized part of Rome. That put the Middle East in Rome's backyard. We're talking about Eastern Rome, otherwise known as the Byzantine Empire. And so when Constantine crafted his entire Christian ideology, it but made sense for him to put the Garden of Eden in his own backyard, as well as everything else associated with Christianity. It became the Constantine brand of Christianity. It became a bastardized, stepped on, passed down, and passed over version of Christianity. And that's how the Garden of Eden came to be in Rome's backyard, rather than where it truly is, the continent of Africa. 300,000 years ago, come back in time with me, before then, there were no conscious humans. Then, around 300,000 years ago, the Great Leap Forward happened. All of a sudden, there was an awakening of human consciousness. There was an awakening of language. There was an awakening of culture. Something happened that separated human beings from every other animal on the planet. What that something is subject to speculation. It is important that we differentiate anatomical human beings from conscious human beings. It's important for us to differentiate anatomical human beings from conscious human beings. Here's what I mean by anatomical human beings. They look like us. They have the same body parts. They have the same mechanisms. I'm talking about Australopithecus. I'm talking about Neanderthals. I'm talking about Homo erectus. These may be anatomical human beings, but they are not conscious human beings. Just as chimpanzees, bonobos, and gorillas have a similar appearance, those animals cannot be classified as humans, correct? You wouldn't call a gorilla a human, although a gorilla has a similar anatomy to us. However, science has called all these subhuman groups members of the human family. A more appropriate term would be hominid, which means human-like. This is important because one of the lies that you've been told, one of the ways that they have manipulated you intellectually and scientifically, is by telling you that you are a Homo erectus, that you are a subhuman species, that the first group of people to come out of the African continent were subhuman, meaning you are a subhuman. They're scientifically calling you a gorilla. But as we're going to see as we progress, they are the subhumans. There are three factors that define a conscious human being. Number one, symbiotic culture. Symbiotic culture, S-Y-M-B-O-L-I-C, symbiotic culture. That's just a real sexy way of saying the ability to teach the next generation what you've learned. All right, to pass on your culture to the next generation. So what are we talking about when we're talking about culture? We're talking about music. We're talking about patterns of behavior. We're talking about collective knowledge. We're talking about how we interact with each other in our relationships, right? Social norms, ways, and mores. That's what we're talking about when we're talking about culture. That's number one. That's the first thing that defines a human being, a conscious human being. When we look at Neanderthals, Neanderthals had no culture. Australopithecus had no culture. Homo erectus had no culture. Homo habilis had no culture. Cro-Magnon had no culture. Now, when you look at us, and I'm talking about the African, I'm talking about the conscious human being, we see evidence of culture. So let me give you an example. 200,000 years ago, there's evidence of a cosmetic industry in a place called Blombos. So that's the very first makeup industry. That's a sign of culture, and that happened 200,000 years ago. So 200,000 years ago, the ladies was already doing makeup, right? 200,000 years ago, we see our ancestors being able to pass on what they learned and transmitting their behavioral traditions from one generation to the next. Okay, so one generation knew how to weave quilts, the next generation knew how to weave quilts. We do not see that with Homo erectus, Homo habilis, and these other groups, Neanderthals or Cro-Magnon. All right, so I said that there were how many factors that define a conscious human being? How many are there?
Three.
There are three. The first is symbolic culture. The second one is language. All right. Language. All right, so when I'm saying language, I'm not talking about the ability to communicate using vocal intonations. That's what your dogs do. Dogs communicate using vocal intonations, right? Almost all animals communicate using vocal intonations, unless they are using pheromones, okay? So that's how animals communicate, primarily light, pheromones, or sound. That's not what we're talking about. Language starts with phonemes. A phoneme is an intonation that cannot be broken down into a lesser element, all right? So these are the atoms of languages. They can't be broken down any further. So let me give you an example. K, all right? K is a phoneme. There is no way that I can break down K or G. Those are phonemes, all right? So those are phonemes. Those are basically grunts. And the human brain doesn't learn languages through written words. The human brain learns languages by hearing them. So a child comes into the world with 150 sounds. A child comes into this world able to make 150 sounds. But listen to all the sounds that your child makes, all these reverberations that your child is able to make. All right. Out of the 6,500 human languages that exist, there are about 150 sounds. Right now, no language uses all of those sounds. But the most advanced languages on the planet use the vast majority of those sounds at its disposal. So the hardest languages to learn are your tonal languages that use more than 100 phonemes. All right. That's why these languages are so hard to learn. Languages like the Xhosa language that uses clicks and tones. And by tones, I mean by changing the tone of a word, you change its entire meaning.
Yes. That's that's like us, yo.
Right? The English language has 44 phonemes. Just 44 phonemes. Whereas your indigenous languages have 140. Mm. All right? What do you do with phonemes? Phonemes come together to create what are called morphemes. A morpheme is a word or a sound that can't be broken down further without losing its meaning. Okay? In other words, cat Can't break that down any further. You know that cat, a morpheme consisting of several phonemes, means an animal of, you know, that particular species, right? And you put all that together, and then sounds become words, words become full sentences, and that's how the brain learns where one word ends and another one begins, by putting those words into a pattern that give the sentence meaning. That is what makes a human being. The ability to grunt doesn't make a human being. The ability to bark doesn't make a human being, and it also doesn't mean that there is language that would be recognizable by an intelligent human being. All we are hearing are phonemes. The ability to turn those phonemes into morphemes and put all that together and form sentences is what makes a human being. So the human brain develops in stages. In stages 1 and 2, your brain learns to recognize sounds. And over time, as you adapt to the world around you, you drop some of those 150 phonemes that you come into the world with. Why is this important? The language that you use creates a frequency that your body responds to. The language that you use creates a frequency that your body responds to. Every planet vibrates according to a frequency, including Earth, whose frequency is 432 megahertz. The same frequency produced from the word om.
That's why.
The first women and men used tonal languages. These were languages that changed the pitch of a morpheme, that changed the meaning of the word, and also changes the way the body responds to vibrations being produced by the percussion within you. Those pitches, those tones, create a vibration within your body. That vibration becomes a percussion upon which your organs are played. I don't think it's sheer irony that we call our organs organs, organs which are instruments meant to be played, because the percussion of the words that we use and the tones that we use produce a vibration within our body that has a direct effect on our consciousness. The chords of your voice box, and of course, there's that instrument reference again, chords within your voice box create vibrations on the drums of your ears and the organs of your body, all of which are played like instruments, the beat of your heart, and we can go on and on. I say all that to say this: tonal languages inspire the growth of brain cells, they inspire healing, they inspire deep states of consciousness, they inspire a resonance with the planet. And the further we go back in history and the closer we get to the source, the more resonance we see with the planet, represented by the 141 phonemes that are still in existence in African languages. And I say all that to say this as well: the further we move away from tonal languages, the less intelligent we become, the more impotent our language becomes, the more out of sync with natural vibrations we become.
True.
Again, I said that there were 144, typically 144 phonemes on the African continent, 144. In the English language, only 44. We're using a regressive language. And that is in part responsible for our sickness, our de-evolution. This is absolute fact, family. And when I say sickness, I mean that literally. Sound can heal and sound can harm. In the military, they're developing sonic weapons as we speak. And they've been developing them since the war in Panama during the 80s, when they first started experimenting with sonic weapons for crowd control. Sound can also be used to heal. All right? Sound is currently being used to destroy cancer cells. But we don't need something external to heal ourselves. All we need to do is get back to our natural percussive ability.
That makes so much sense why they stole our language in the first place.
True indeed. True indeed. That's also why we encourage all of you to learn one of your indigenous tonal languages. So there are three things that make a human being. What is the first thing? A conscious human being.
Symbolic.
Yeah. Symbolic culture. Absolutely. Your ability to pass down your culture from generation to generation. What's number two?
Language.
Exactly. Language. Language beyond phonemes. So phonemes are typically grunts. Any creature can produce a phoneme. And then the final component of a conscious human being is intelligence. Now, let me break down the definition of intelligence. The definition of intelligence is the ability to acquire and apply knowledge and skills. All right? That's only one, but not the exclusive aspect of being a human being. So we see Australopithecus. We see Homo habilis. We see Homo heidelbergensis. We see Neanderthals. We see Cro-Magnon creating tools. All right? We see them with some sort of intelligence, some sort of ability to acquire and apply knowledge and skills. But what they're missing are the other components of what makes a human being conscious. All right? So now we can start to redefine what a human being truly is. Your legacy as the original and most intelligent people on the planet, most in harmony with the frequencies of nature, right? That's your legacy. When a conscious human being rises up, they possess intelligence, they possess language, they possess culture, they start to ask important questions. Who am I? How did I get here? What does the world around me look like, and what is my place in that world? Now, to answer that third question, what does the world around me look like, we began the first real age of exploration 300,000 years ago. By 300,000 years ago, we had already spread out all over the African continent. So we're going to get into the origins, or what we believe are the hypothetical origins of humankind in just a minute. First of all, let me talk about this age of exploration, because for some reason in conscious circles, this still isn't discussed, and I kind of understand why. There are all kinds of groups out there that have all kinds of theories about Lemuria and, you know, us being the indigenous people of North America, which of course is true. But these groups tend to warp science for their ideology. Family, what am I talking about? If I'm suggesting that we are God's chosen people, then I got to put our origins, and I'm using the Constantine Bible, then I got to put our origins where?
In the Middle East.
I got to put our origins in the Middle East. Because if I put our origins where science indicates that we came from, then that would negate my whole platform.
If you're using the Constantine Bible.
If you're using the Constantine Bible.
Yeah.
Right. I see what you get. I'm not going to chase you down that rabbit hole. I already know what you want, fam. But let me use a different group. Okay, so the indigenous movement. There's the rise of the indigenous movement. And while they're suggesting that we were the first people in the Americas, which is absolutely true as you see on this map, they've taken some things out of context so that it would fit their platform. Look, family, I'm not interested in building any kind of platform on pseudoscience. I bring you the facts. Some of it is the result of low racial self-esteem. Some groups out there, no matter how black they profess to be, refuse to acknowledge that they're African.
Sure.
Call me anything but African. Now, where did we first hear that? Like, who's the lowest on the social and human and anthropological totem pole? Well, the African. So if you believe that, you're going to carry those beliefs over into your actions. And you're going to build platforms. You're going to build ideologies that negate and refute your African origins out of low racial self-esteem. Look, every other group on the planet acknowledges this. Why not us? So about 185,000 years ago, we had the crossing of the Red Sea. We had the first proverbial crossing of the Red Sea. According to the science that we have, about 5,000 of us started the journey out of Africa. And around 185,000 years ago, we ended up in Israel where we started building. Okay? About 100,000 years ago, we also left the central part of Africa, somewhere around the Sahara Desert, and we moved into South Africa. So by 100,000 years ago, South Africa was occupied. Okay? Having circumnavigated, on land at least, the African continent, around 72,000 years ago, Aborigines left. We already knew how to navigate the seas 72,000 years ago. And by 72,000 years ago, we have the arrival of our first people on the Australian continent. Okay? Around 60,000 years ago, we had conquered the Indian continent. Now, Now, here's where things started to change. We're going to get into this when we talk about Zeptepi and when we get into the grand procession, the equinocti. All right, but 60,000 years ago, we had already conquered the Middle East and the Indian continent. We had already started establishing what would come to be known as the Dravidian culture. And 40,000 years ago, only 40,000 years ago. Now, some people ask the question, how is it that we left the African continent 72,000 years ago, but we only reached Europe 40,000 years ago? Anyone have any hypotheses? Why is it that we were able to go all the way across the globe 72,000 years ago, but we were only able to get into Europe about 40,000 years ago?
It was still in ice.
It was in an ice age. It was in an ice age. This period of time was called the Worm Glaciation, W-U-R-M. And it began about 70,000 years ago. In other words, it was hostile to human life. There was a thawing. There was a temporary thawing around 40,000 years ago. And when that thawing happened, our original people, the first human beings, you all remember, if you read Civilization of Barbarism, Sheikh Anta Diop goes in on this, but our original people moved into the European continent. This was a temporary thawing of that ice age because the Worm Glaciation lasted 70,000 years, which means what? Our people were trapped, right? 40,000 years ago, the very first black men, women, and children who started exploring Europe found themselves trapped in the Worm Glaciation. We're going to come back to that. 35,000 years ago, we were all over Asia. That includes Japan. We're going to get back to that as well. By 25,000 years ago, we had reached North America's west coast. And I say west coast because the anthropological evidence for us arriving at the east coast is still being developed, still being worked on. But there is absolutely nothing to suggest intellectually that we wouldn't be able to make it to the east coast of the east coast of the Americas if we were able to make it all the way to Australia 72,000 years ago. All right, so we're going to come back to that. And by 15,000 years ago, which coincides with the end of the Ice Age, we see the very first recognizable European cultures. So it took 25,000 years for the first European culture to pop up from the time that we arrived to the end of that glaciation. Okay, so we're going to come back to that, but your legacy was stolen from you when any group tells you that you were not the first founder of the civilizations of humanity. That's what I want to emphasize to you all right now. You and your ancestors were the first everywhere. And next week, I'm going to give you irrefutable evidence of the fact that your mothers and your fathers were the founders of Indian, Asian, and American civilization. We're going to come back to all these areas next week and examine them, but I just wanted to put that into context for you all. So we're going to start off with Zeptepi. Now, first of all, who's never heard the term Zeptepi? I guess a better question is who has?
I've heard that term once.
Zeptepi is the first rising of the sun. That's what it translates. It is a Kemetic phrase, Kemet being the proper name for what the Albion calls Egypt. Zeptepi, the time of the first rising of the sun, began when Atum, or Atum, A-T-U-M, created the duality that would set the stage for civilization, and it would climax with the Osirian drama. So this is the very first origin story, the story that would ultimately give birth to the Genesis creation story. Now, we see similarities here, and I wanted to draw a quick parallel between this creation story and the story that we see in Genesis. Because in Genesis, what is the climax? The climax of the creation, the process of creation, was the first man and the first woman, Adam and Eve. Our proverbial Adam and Eve were who?
Heru
is the Jesus. Symbolism that's transmutated in Christianity. So we have Osiris and Isis, whose appropriate names are Asar and Aset. So the period of time known as Zeptepi lasted for about 100,000 years. This is a period that civilization refined itself through what were called the grand procession. The grand procession is a period of time that lasts 25,772 years. That's the amount of time the Earth takes to complete its axial wobble. Its axial wobble. Not only does the Earth revolve around the Sun, but the Earth revolves around its own axis. We call this an axial wobble. And it takes 25,772 years for the Earth to complete an axial wobble. And every 25,772 years, there is a period of upheaval and change, as we are going to see. So there are four of these periods in what is known as Zeptepi, Kemetic prehistory. Four of these periods. And throughout these periods, humankind was refined. Halfway through what's called the Great Year, and I need you all to write that down, the Great Year, that is also known as the Grand Procession. In Kemetic science, 1 year lasted 25,772 years. So your ancestors considered 25,772 years as the grand, the great year, the grand procession. It is the amount of time that Earth takes to complete its axial wobble. That's going to be important coming up later on. And this is a period when they say divinity ruled the Earth. These were men and women who so thoroughly represented the divine principles that they were called gods on Earth. This was Zeptepi. It was a golden age of human civilization, an age that was free of conflict, an age that was replete with growth, knowledge, wisdom, and understanding, and laid the foundation for human civilization. Halfway through the great year, in the year 11,700 BC, the Saharan apocalypse began. See, that's how specific we can get with this, and geologists have confirmed this as well. Remember earlier I said that during these great processions, every 25,772 years, there was a great upheaval. This was one of those great upheavals, because as the Earth tilted on its wobble, it changed the position of continents on the planet, which means we have the melting of the ice that had trapped our ancestors in the north. But when that ice started melting, what we had evolved into, in order to survive that environment, was unrecognizable from the people that initially arrived there. So what you see on your screen is a scientific rendition of what these Neanderthals, which is at the top left side of your screen, and a Cro-Magnon, which is at the bottom left side of your screen, looks like. So we know that there was interbreeding, and we know this because non-black races today carry between 1 and 2.5% Neanderthal DNA from that interbreeding. So we know that happened. That created a group of human hybrids called, again, Cro-Magnon. We also know that low-light environments create melanin recession. We also know that low-light environments create melanin recession. What you see on the upper right-hand side of your screen are animals that live in caves, animals that have never been exposed to light. They have absolutely no pigment because they need no pigment. No sunlight, no melanin. Make sense? So we know that these two factors were at play, and that gave rise to what you see on your screen in the direct center, modern-day Cro-Magnon. It is my suggestion that Cro-Magnon never went extinct. They will tell you that. Cro-Magnon lives today. These subhuman, quasi-human, human hybrids will tell you that you are the subhuman, when in reality, they are the evolutionary response to living in low-light environments and a direct result of interbreeding, which is why as much as 2.5% of their DNA is composed of Neanderthal DNA. Does that make sense, family? Because we came from environments of abundance, and because the Albion comes from an environment of scarcity, when they arrive, we gave freely and continued to give and continued to give and continued to give until ultimately we found ourselves in bondage, dealing with a group of people that did not share our value system, which was unfathomable for us because the vast majority of the planet all shared the same value system until you had the Albion coming out of his frozen wasteland and her frozen wasteland and decimating the entire planet. Unaelewa?
Unaelewa.
So for those of you who can't see the screen, around the last precession of the equinox, the last great year, the Earth's axis shifted, leading to the destruction of the Sahara and its civilizations. There are civilizations unexplored beneath the sands in the Sahara. This is verified. In fact, I'll give you all the coordinates probably in the notes later on, but you can go onto Google Maps, which is how they found some of these civilizations, and visit the Sahara Desert, which, by the way, is so hot, you cannot visit unless you had a spacesuit on. But if we rewind time around the end of the last glaciation, around the middle of the last great year, the Saharan Desert was a vast, lush Sahara, just like the Nile Valley. Many civilizations, we believe, we hypothesize, existed there, and that is the cradle of human civilization. Now, we call that, and that's the cradle of mankind. Now, we call it the cradle of mankind because when we look at dispersal patterns, we see that all the dispersal patterns of early humanity originated around that era, around that area that we call the Sahara Desert. Make sense? We don't know exactly what these civilizations were comprised of and, you know, their philosophy, but we do know that the vast majority of their members, these refugees, ended up in the Nile Valley because it was the closest source of water. And because of that, there were conflicts. All right? And that's going to get us into our final segment, our discussion, our very brief discussion on the Nile Valley civilizations. So I want to take a quick second. We're going to talk about Kemet, and specifically we're going to talk about three periods. I'm going to talk about the beginning, the 18th, and the 25th dynasties. But before we do that, we talked about Zebtepi, and we talked about the refinement of human civilization, right? We talked about Osar and Aset laying the foundations for Kemetic society. There's one individual who has done something that no one else was able to do since, all right? And this was Narmer, otherwise known as the son of the Scorpion King. The Scorpion King was a warrior in Kemet. All of these refugees coming out of the Saharan Desert ended up, many of them ended up in the Nile Valley. Some of them ended up in what is present-day Nigeria to establish what was known as the Kingdom of Nok, which we're going to get into. Some of them ended up establishing the Phoenician empires. Some of them ended up in present-day Morocco, and some of them continued on south. We're specifically talking about the groups that ended up along the Nile Valley. When those groups ended up along the Nile Valley, there were already people there. We're talking about 3,400 BC. So up until now, we've been talking about hundreds of thousands of years in the past, you know, tens of thousands of years in the past. Now we're getting relatively recent because now we're talking about, what, 5,100 some odd years ago? How old is modern civilization? How long has the technology that we're using now been around? Cell phones, laptops, cars, planes, hyperloops. How long has this been around? Since about the industrial age, right? How long is it?
Not even a century.
Not even a century, right? Mm-hmm. Y'all following me?
Yeah.
I am laying out 300,000 years of human history. Is it unfathomable that we could destroy ourselves within the next 50 years as a result of the technology that we've produced and created?
Yes.
Absolutely. Nuclear war is a possibility. Creating a virus that destroys the vast majority of human population is a possibility. And when we look over the course of human history, we see many bottlenecks happening across many regions. Is it unfathomable that we have created advanced civilizations in the past whose technology was greater than ours that could have potentially been destroyed or destroyed themselves? Mm-hmm. Kemetic civilization lasted, 5,500 years? Mm-hmm. Right? And they're still... They haven't even started breaching the science that went into the construction of the Great Pyramids. They haven't even finished finding the buildings. Every day they're breaking into a new level, a new substrata, a new set of tombs, a new set of structures that add on to what we know about this 5,000-year-long civilization. So all I'm saying to you all is open up your imaginations. It's not unlikely because we've only been doing this for about a century, right? We've only been doing this for 100 years. We're talking about 300,000 years of human history. Even if that was spaced out over the course of 1,000 years, that gives us 3,000 advanced civilizations that have come and gone. So around 3400 BC, so getting myself back on track, there were two separate kingdoms. There was the Red Land to the north, and by the north, we're basing this on the Nile River Delta, and that extends all along the Nile. And then there was what they call the White Land in the south. In the south, you had a king, and he was called the Scorpion King, and he made the first attempts to push out who they considered invaders from the north around 3200. Who were these invaders? These invaders were the Arabs, a group of people who would later become known as the Hyksos. Because remember, we've been talking about 75,000, 300,000 years of human adaptation and evolution. By then, different groups had popped up. We're going to talk more about those groups later on. All right? While the Scorpion King would not succeed because he was killed in the process on a hunting accident, according to legend, he was eaten by a hippo, or he was attacked by a hippo, which isn't unlikely because they're ugly, vicious beasts who are known to kill human beings. A century later, one of his offspring, and his name was Menes, or Narmer, would finally subdue the north and unify the country, becoming the first Sultan of the very first dynasty, and this happened 5,165 years ago in 3150 BC. This family was the very first war of unification. They call this the War of the Double Crown. Now, for those of you all who have gone to the third degree war study course, you know that there are four types of wars. Anybody remember what those are?
War of Liberation, War of Annihilation,
Unification. War of Unification.
Yeah, War of Unification.
Unification, Liberation, Annihilation, and Subjugation. Right? Unification, liberation, annihilation, and subjugation. This was the very first war of unification, and it was fought. It was called the War of the Double Crown, fought in 3150 BC. And at the end of that war, once Menes had achieved the results that he had set out to achieve, Kemet remained unified, powerful, and stable for 1,000 years. That's six dynasties. Now, what happened? On your screen, you're going to see first intermediate period, second intermediate period, third intermediate period. Is there anybody who knows what is meant by the phrase intermediate period?
That's when they didn't have a sultan or a pharaoh, right?
Not necessarily. These are periods of upheaval, civil wars. Think of these as dark ages.
Yeah, that's what I mean, kind of. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, true indeed. There was sloppy administration. They were decentralized. The central administration had fallen apart and then coming back together. And typically, these were periods of invasion, all right? Or there were periods of civil war. And the first intermediate period at the end of those six dynasties happened because people started getting too rich, started feeling themselves. A civil class warfare broke out, and it lasted for 405 years. 405 years of civil war. So, again, when you all see intermediate periods, think dark ages. And while we were busy fighting amongst ourselves, we had wave after wave of invasions. The same people that had been pushed out by Menes, they weren't completely gone. They were developing their own warlike cultures, their own vindictiveness, and they would always come back. And ultimately, they would create a mixed group of people called the Egyptians. And I use that word intentionally, family. Okay? Go ahead. True indeed. I use that word intentionally because it's important that we differentiate the mixed race Egyptians from the original founders of Kemet. This is how Kemet became Egypt. These waves of invaders, the Hyksos, the Sea People, ultimately the Islamic wave, the Roman wave, all contributed to the mixing of the races in Kemet and ultimately the whitewashing of the empire.
Yeah, Egypt came from Egyptos.
Absolutely right. Absolutely right. So during these intermediate periods, what we have are invaders coming in. They are integrating into Kemet. They're setting up their own capitals. They're tearing down Kemetic cultures. And this would go on back back and forth, back and forth, back and forth until around 1292 BC. That would kick off the great 18th dynasty. By 1292, we had gotten tired of all the invaders, we had gotten tired of all the civil wars, and we decided to restore Kemet to its glory, and they did. I just want you all to take a look at the faces on your screen. Queen T looks like my ex-girlfriend. I got a head shaped like Akhenaten. I'm just playing. What color is... what color is Nefertiti? What does she look like to you all?
She don't look right. That Nefertiti, is that the one that came out of Eurasia?
That's the original bus. No, not that Eurasia. I know what you're talking about. That's something else. This is the original bus. What color skin is Tutankhamun's skin? Look at Meritaten's hairstyle. Look at Amos's hairstyle.
Beautiful.
This is the great 18th dynasty. This is the dynasty that restored order to Kemet. And I'm emphasizing this to you all. If you've read The Destruction of Black Civilization, you kind of know what I'm getting at. Every time the original black people of Kemet ascended to power, there was stability. They had returned Kemet to its original vibe. Construction began. The economy stabilized. Culture took center stage. And there was peace. It was during these intermediate periods, and then ultimately the late periods and the Greco-Roman periods, where you had the Ptolemaic pharaohs, that we see the complete atrophy of what used to be Kemetic culture. All right, so if you can't see the screen, I'm just going to read it out to you all real quickly. From 1150 to 1069 BC, Kemet fell into decline from wave after wave of non-black invasions. The survivors of these invasions were pushed south into present-day Sudan, where they preserved their culture and began to reorganize. The campaign to retake their lands to the north was finally successful under Pianchi in 715 BC. However, this would only last for about 100 years, because after so many centuries of invasions, it's miraculous that Kemet even stood for that 5,500 years. The invaders had so completely corrupted the administration, so completely corrupted the culture, that the last dynasty, the 25th dynasty, the last black dynasty, and parts of the 26th dynasty, they weren't able to rebuild what was torn down. So those are the three most important dynasties in Kemetic history. Actually, the first through the 8th dynasty, the 18th dynasty, and then the 25th dynasty. Those are the three most important periods in Kemetic history. That first period was so important because, first of all, it lasted 1,000 years. And during that period, you had a lot of the great construction that we're known for. You had a lot of the great thinkers that we're known for. Imhotep, you had the Rand Papyrus, or the development of high mathematics. You had the development of advanced surgeries. Heart surgery, brain surgery, you had mummification, you had high spiritual culture, all these things, and that happened at Abydos, all these things happened in the first 1,000 years of Kemetic history, all right, and that happened after Menes unified us into one people, and ever since then, we've been getting pushed further and further south, so we held the line at the first division between the northern lands and the southern lands, we were pushed further south into Sudan, we held the line there. Fast forward to today, and in 2015, South Sudan and the Nilos there are continuing to hold the line despite being pushed even further south by the Arabs that now occupy northern Sudan. This is a 5,000-year-long war that we found ourselves engaged in. So with that being said, family, hey, I love you all. Thank you all for spending some time with me this Saturday. Next week is probably going to be the most powerful, the most climactic of this series. It's going to be an important week, so make sure you all are here, all right? I love you all. Be before you.
All right.
Bibi Fahorie. Yeah, that's coming off of Pan-African Alliance. And it happened. I was searching, and it happened upon, and I can't find any other part, and I couldn't get it on my tablet. But I'm going to try, because I would love to hear the continuation of this brother's presentation to the brothers and sisters' response, and I'm quite sure you would, too. So we're going to take a break right now. And we come back from the break, we'll open up for questions for those many callers. So, you know, hit star twice and let's have some conversation. Brothers and sisters, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We'll be right back. You stay with us.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Down in a breeze, brothers with their afros taking center stage, watching as this culture slowly comes of age with a mind of its own. Yeah, mothers out in the yard hanging up her clothes, fathers playing with the kids, keeping them on the go. Neighborhoods feeding on the heart of its soul. And that's where my feelings live. Cause I love my people. The way they let it go on the dance floor. Ain't nobody gonna do it like us, no. I'm loving my people. Straight to the kitchen table. My heart's full of love, spirits in the flow. And I'm loving my people. Teachers off in the classroom giving up the love. Supported by that mom and dad who want that special touch. Little acts of kindness prove to mean so much. When we give what we know, kitchen pots are banging, smell of soul food fills the air. You walk past the neighbor's house wishing you had dinner there. Better times for living when people seem to care about that place where they grow. That's why I love my people. The way they let it go on a dance floor. Ain't nobody gonna do it like us, no. I'm loving my people. Said I love my people. I love. So from the stove, straight to the kitchen table. My heart's full of love, spirits in the flow. I'm loving my people. Folks gather at the church on a Sunday morn. Openly they sing and praise and gospel music's born. God gave us love enough with spirits free to run. Why can't we learn to love ourselves like we're the chosen one? Come and let me know how your life is doing good. May how the blessings flow through the neighborhood. Share with me that time of feelings understood in that place we call home. Cause I love my people. The way they let it go on the dance floor. Ain't nobody gonna do it like us, no. I'm loving my people. So that I'm loving mine.
I love.
So from the stove, straight to the kitchen table. My heart's full of love, spirits in the flow. And I'm loving my people. So that I love my people.
I love.
the way they let it go on the dance floor. Ain't nobody gonna do it like us, no. I'm loving my people. Say that I'm loving my. I love. So from the stove straight to the kitchen table. Can't nobody do it like us now. I'm loving my people. See that I'm loving my. I love. I'm loving my.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. What I played for you came off of the Black Alliance, the Pan-African Alliance. And it's odd because there's nothing else I don't know how I really got it, because the piece that led me to it doesn't let me go any further. But hey, we were blessed. And I'm going to try my best to see if I can get the other portions of it, of this course. It's the Stolen Legacy course, and I'll see if I can do that for us. It's definitely worth listening to. The brothers, you know, and the brothers and sisters who are taking the course are sounding great. And but I've been saying all the time, and, you know, there's a few things that I learned, and I'm quite sure possibly you have too. That's the reason why I believe that we must go back to get this history of ours from the beginning. We should never bring our history or start our history in our captivity, you know, because basically when you start your history in your captivity, it says to you, you had nothing prior to that, you know, like I said, and that's what the European wants us to do, wants us to believe that we were running around the jungle with a rag up our ass and a bone through our nose, never having created a civilization of any kind, of any substance. And as we know, nothing could be furthest from the truth. So if you want to join this conversation, hit star twice. Let me know you want to get in. I see a number of people on the queue. Please do so and help me out here. Yeah, I know we only have about 20 minutes left, but that's great. Good conversation. One of the things that the brother brought out in the presentation that I always say is that we are the first people everywhere, and that's been documented. You know, my good brother, my ancestor now, Renoko Rashidi, documented the African present to this day, in present day, documented the African and present globally. In Vietnam, Southeast Asian, Indian, so forth, Australia, wherever, you know, and even here. But the brothers, some brothers and sisters here, that's ADOS piece, you know, and others who want to say that we were not us, Africans, that we're indigenous to this land, we're not Africans. In fact, they even took that even to a ridiculous step further to say that we were taken from here and taken to England and taken to other parts of Europe and then brought back to be enslaved. That's weird as hell to me as well, you know, because they were saying, well, we're all the ships that brought us over here. Where's this? Where's that? You know, the bottom line is that it's documented. It is there. It's verified. What y'all trying to bring is some foolishness. But what they're trying to do is bring in the idea that we're indigenous just like the other indigenous people. Where's our money? You know, where's our land? Where's ours? You know, and because if you remember when Andrew Jackson kicked the brothers and sisters out of Florida, and if you see Exterminate All the Brutes, that scene, that beginning scene, is when the Caucasian comes down into Florida, into the Seminoles, and asks for his property. I want my property. And this is what he says. If you give me back my property, I will let you. I will let you go to an area we have for you. He didn't say, if you give me my property back, I'm going to leave you alone and go on about my business. No, I'm going to take you out of your home, your land, things that you know, and I'm going to bring you and take you to a place I have set for you. Now, of course, we know that the Trail of Tears took them all the way from Florida area, southern Florida, mid-Florida, probably the Panhandle area, all the way into other states, all the way into Oklahoma. All the way into Oklahoma. And, of course, then they started displacing people because they realized there was some things that they wanted out of Oklahoma, oil. That's why some of the brothers and sisters were settled there who had land in Oklahoma became rich, you know. But no, we're not indigenous to this land, but we're indigenous to the planet. You can make that statement. But our home is the continent of Africa. And the continent of Africa was, is now, and will be the richest continent on the planet. When you look at, when they talk about Pangaea, that is when the continents were all one huge landmass millions of years ago before the dinosaurs. Well, not a time of dinosaurs, because dinosaurs a million years ago, but truly before human beings. Before human beings were on the planet, there was one huge landmass they called Pangaea. And over periods of time, the tectonic plates and so forth, the shifting of it, and it began to move back and forth and back and everything like that. And, of course, when you look at a map, you can see how things could be fitted in and around Africa. Africa is the center. Africa is the center. Africa has more resources than any place else, any other so-called continent or land. Africa. The brother just said that because of the climatic changes, even the Sahara can still avail us with resources. And, of course, the Sahara is probably the biggest desert, the most vast desert that there is. But it could avail us. And I don't know if you've heard this one about ancient Kemet and the pyramids. They believe that Hori Maket, Heru of the Horizon, or what the Greeks called the Sphinx, is older. They believe that it is possibly, because they're saying that when they examined, once they dug the Hori Maket out, because Hori Maket was covered with sand, when Napoleon and his folks came there for exploration, remember, it was at that time Europeans started exploring or documenting Kemet. And the field of Egyptology has a study began at that time. And then they realized Hori Maket was under sand, and they kept digging out until his body was exposed. The head of a man, the body of a lion. And when they looked at the layers, they looked at one bottom layer that it felt at that time Kemet was a lot wetter or more tropic than it was now, or even hundreds of years previous, or 1,000 years previous. Because understand, the Kemetic society is over 5,500 years old and older. And the society was founded on, yes, the greatness of Kemet, the apex, the zenith, the pinnacle is Kemet and the Great Pyramids. But it began in the south. It began in the south. And they moved north. And they followed the river. Because the river is the lifeblood. And they continued to move north, downriver. It is at the Giza Plateau where pyramid is perfection. Because there are more pyramids in the Sudan than it is in Kemet. But it is there when it is perfected, when it's at its pinnacle, its apex, its zenith. So it is a history, dear brothers and sisters, that our young people must understand, and it is ours. He mentioned about the Arabs and the people today who dominate and control Kemet. Dr. Owasa, who you have seen if you watch the Learning Channel, Discovery Channel, National Geographic, A&E, whatever, he's always purported this, supported this multi-ethnic Kemet from beginning. No, hell no. This invasion of Arabs and so forth, because even the Hyksos, they only lasted a few hundred years. Invaded. It was the first major invasion of Kemet. It only lasted a few hundred years. 602, good afternoon. 602.
You sure that's 602?
No, that's 646, man. My bad. I don't know what's wrong with me today.
Your eyesight is causing you a little problem, bro.
I need to put my glasses on. That's what it is.
Ain't nothing wrong with that. You know, it's a beautiful thing to wear them.
Yeah.
Hey, Oshie, right quick, man. You know, a young boy here, you talking about this, and the first thing he going to say to you is, how that going to help me eat? How that going to help me eat? He don't want to hear nothing about that. Now, it's a different story when you first start educating your kids to expose them to this type of information, and you do it over a continuous period of time. It's a whole different dichotomy.
No doubt. But I try
and expose it to a young boy today, man, you get one of those 17-year-olds that out there doing their thing that ain't never been exposed to no culture or nothing like that. It's a hell of a sale, brother.
Well, you know, I'll say this, Brother Jay, and that's, I understand what you're saying, because I've spoken and talked about, you know, our history and our culture and ancient Kemet, even in youth prisons and homes, you know, and it's interesting, and you're right. I can understand that, and I've spoken in schools. But the bottom line is, the more you know about yourself, the better you feel about yourself, and the better you feel about yourself, your mind changes. See, I'm trying to put something on your mind. I'm trying to help you understand and purge yourself of the ignorance and so forth. And maybe if that happens, you know, then you'll realize it ain't about a hustle for you. It is about understanding who you are and having a love for yourself and a love for each other and a development of our culture and a change. A change needs to happen. You know, it shouldn't just be about struggling and trying to find your way in this madness. But I understand that, you know, for people who just think about survival and thinking about just getting past and getting mine, I understand that. But this concept, this idea is about changing the mindset of our people, period, and putting us on the right path and track to self-determination, to liberation, to independence, to sovereignty. Because we realize we've done it before. If we've done it before, we can do it again. And I'm not saying we can, you know, build pyramids. The hell with building pyramids. We did it. Did a damn good job. They're still standing. In fact, if you get a chance to go to Kemet and you go to that laser light show they have at night, and you have you're taking a bus or whatever transportation you have, and you're approaching the pyramids at dusk. I mean, it is a beautiful sight. And you realize how perfect it is, and then you realize how great of a people we are, you know. So I understand what you're saying, though, Jay, you know. But, I mean, the bottom line is that we have to know what we have done. Because, once again, the narrative has been written by these people. And they are the ones that are, I mean, just like the Ptolemaic time of Kemet, you know. It's Caucasian, and they have defiled the temples and tombs by putting their faces on that. But they were there for hundreds of years, you know. The Ptolemies, you know, the Ptolemies are not part of the dynastic period. The dynastic period ended at 31, and our last great walk in the sun was Dynasty 25 of Pianchi and Taharqa and them brothers, you know. But it is something that we need to know. We need to know. Because once again, we need to know about the Great Zimbabwe. We need to know about the Mali Empire. We need to know about all of these things. We need to know about Africa. We need to know about Akabeker. We need to know that we sailed out of here and came to this hemisphere. We need to know that. And we didn't come to take. We didn't come to, you know, to supplant people and enact a genocide on somebody and take their, no, because that's not who we are. You know, the European, that's who they is. And that's why in this presentation that you just heard, if you did get a chance to hear it, the brother explained that in that ice age, the Europeans in their mindset and how they were not conducive to giving. They were conducive to taking because of the harsh environment which they came up in. And that mindset is constantly with them to this very day. You know.
Right.
So,
you know, the bottom line is you got to educate the children.
We got to.
But I always say you got to educate the children early. You can't wait till they get a certain age to start educating them and all that.
Right.
Because unfortunately, it goes two ways. It either clicks or it don't click. And if you get in this situation where it don't click and you don't pick it up fast enough that it don't click and go in another direction, then you can lose the kid. You know what I mean? I've seen it many a time. Yeah. Brothers try to push something on the youngster. And the youngster ain't interested in it.
Well,
and instead of backing off and repivoting and going at it on a different approach to get the trust of the kids and impart wisdom on them, they become dogmatic with it. And you can't get a 19, 17, 18, 19 year old to do certain things at that stage by being dogmatic. That just don't happen. These are absolute knuckleheads out here, and they don't know nothing about respecting elders and things of that nature. So you got to be really in tune to it when you're dealing with, as I call them, young rascals.
I hear you, brother. Thanks a lot, Jay. Catch another call before we get out of here.
Go ahead, brother.
All right, my brother. Peace to you, Jay. Thank you. 414-507.
Hey, Brother Oshi.
Hey, what's up?
Hey, to get right to the point, really what this is about is mental health. And you can't be mentally healthy or spiritually healthy if you don't know who you are,
mm-hmm.
if you don't know what you are, who you are, and where you came from.
Right.
It's all about ego. If you're running around and you're feeling inferior and you think that you are a descendant of inferior people, then you will be lunch.
Yep.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So these things are important because a house divided against itself cannot stand. And as human beings, it is our nature to work in unity with each other. And then we can gather food. That's how... otherwise, it's every man for himself and hunt for himself.
Well, that's what the Europeans, that's their mindset. That's how they developed.
Right.
See, we develop a collective.
That puts us in our weakest state of being.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's how we, so if you want to talk about feeding somebody or finding food, then we have a better chance of finding food if we are mentally healthy and if we can work together.
Right, working together. All right, my brother. 334-334. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Brother Oshie. Good afternoon. And real quick, during that lecture, there were a lot of numbers that was being expressed. 500,000 years, 450,000
right.
years ago, 50,000 years. And so the mind, and trying to piggyback on the previous caller, you know, really can people perceive that kind and type of time frame? And I think that if we go back and revisit some of those older movies, and what came out of it was Bless the Ancestor, Sidney Poitier. There was a party played in the movie called The Bell. I don't know if you're familiar with that. And so when
he was a Moor
back there. Yeah.
Yeah, he was a Moor.
If there's a possibility that we could take some of those old 1960s movies of sorts that had a black figure in it. You had Cleopatra, Richard Burton and
Elizabeth Taylor.
Taylor, right? Mm-hmm. There were a couple of parts that were played by black people in. And I think if we could take some of those older movies and as young people look at that, right, they're going to see the movie, but they're going to see some things that stand out.
Mm-hmm.
And then take those parts and expound on them, right, and start to fill their minds with imagery of people who looked like that back then.
Mm-hmm.
Just something to kind of experiment with, I kind of wonder. And it also gives credence to who Sidney Poitier was and the acting that he was involved with. But these are images that had people in them that were dark-skinned people. And so we use that as a catalyst to study from?
Well,
thank you.
Okay, thank you, brother. Thank you, Brother Lust. Appreciate you, Tay. And that's interesting. Let me just say this before we get out of here because we are at the clock's up on that up on that time, that many of the movies I would say to be explained from, because they are movies, they're not historical, and a lot of time the imagery is definitely not historical, but to be explained, just like the Ten Commandments, just like The Robe, The Gladiator, and other kinds of movies, because a lot of times some of these movies, what is the angle, what is the projection, what is the imagery, it is European. It is how they had viewed it, but we're in it. And what could be explained is that you see how they're telling this story. Well, there's another side to that story. And there's some other things about us being in it that, I remember seeing older movies. You may not see us in medieval times. You don't see us in England, but movies that are more to date, you see, in fact, especially on some of these streaming networks, you see all kind of us in these British movies of ancient time and so forth. You see that, and I know that we were in Europe because we're the first people everywhere. I'm not sure the significance of us being there, especially in their environment because of how they are, but still, it should be explained to us how we are intricate in the history of this world, that we were not doorsteps, that we were not, we played a significant role in the development of this world almost everywhere. And that is a fact. And that's what we need to do.
Asante sana, brother. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, my brother. Thank you, Brother Lusk. Thank you all. Thank you all who called. Brothers and sisters, we end this program like we end all of our programs with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. But not just the M-I-N-D, not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E, because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they sure in hell don't want to pay for it. Brothers and sisters, you have a blessed and wonderful day. Shem Hotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. Bivahorie. Bivahorie means our victorious destiny. Brothers and sisters, we will be victorious. You have a blessed and wonderful day, family. Peace.